All right, good morning, everyone. I'm going to go ahead and get our April meeting of the Arizona Barbering Cosmetology Board started here today. So the first is to hit the gavel, my favorite part. So we are in order and we'll start with the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, everyone. My name is Brandy Flores, and I'm going to be your fill-in board chair today. And so we will start with a roll call of board members and board staff. So we will start with Gary Begley, who I believe is.
Heather will do it.
Oh.
For you.
So for board members, we have Brandy Flores.
Present.
Marshall Knox.
Present.
Trista Guzman Glover.
Present.
Nick Goodman, absent. Brandon McFadden.
Present.
Kate Turrentine.
Present.
Tracy Wilkinson.
Present.
And then board members absent, looks like we have Gary Begley.
Fantastic. And then staff?
For board staff, we have Frank Magali.
Present.
Kelly Shepherd.
Present.
Rosa Rodriguez.
Present.
Carlos Torraza.
Here.
Isabella Legowski, present. Tiffany Jones, present. Lakeisha Coleman.
Present.
Kathy Bergeron.
Present.
Helen Bordelon.
Present.
Lisa Chavez.
Here.
Alexandra Hill.
Present.
And then for legal counsel, we have Jean Gassman.
Present.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. So item three on the agenda is board business. Board may vote to go into executive session if necessary. Is there any need for executive session?
Not at this point.
Fantastic. So subsection A is discussion consideration of on approval of board minutes for the March board meeting. Does anyone have a chance to review those and want to make a motion on approval?
I move that we approve the regular board minutes for the March 15th board meeting.
And second, I was not present for. Fantastic. So we have a motion and a second. Those all in favor of approving the board minutes from March, please say aye.
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 So, acting chair, we will need to have yourself as well as Marshall abstain, which will count towards the vote. But you'll need both need to verbally abstain from that vote.
Great. So any nays on the approval? And any abstain? I abstain, Brandy Flores.
I abstain, Marshall Knox.
Thank you.
So is our count an approval? Fantastic. So motion passes and we approve the March 2024 board meeting minute. So section B of section three is the board member declaration of conflict of interest. Does anyone have a conflict of interest with any Kate? Hearing nothing, there are no conflicts. Now we'll move to section C. Welcome to visiting barber and cosmetology students and instructors. So hello, everyone. Where are you here from and what school?
Yeah, we're here from
Aveda,
and we're all
Fantastic. Well, nice to meet you. Thanks for coming. You'll see we follow our agenda pretty stringently. So these are posted, like, what is it, 24 hours in advance, and then we go through line by line every item, and then we hear cases, and this is just how to get board business done. So glad that you could make it. All right, so next section, section four, the executive director report. So on that note, I will pass it to our ED, Frank.
Good morning, acting chair. That's going to be a weird one to say. Oh, my acting chair. So as usual, I'll start with a little bit of good news. We did have one additional, a positive Google review for this last month. Of course, my remote, there it goes. And our rating does remain at 2.7. The interesting thing I want to point out about that Google review is I originally came in as a one-star review, and after some work and clarification of board staff role, he actually went back and changed his review to a five-star review, and with better understanding of what the role is and what the actual responsibilities of board staff are versus what the perception of those responsibilities are. So I actually think that's very positive that we found ourselves in that situation where we were able to do some education be able to provide the additional support that he needed and all at the same time explaining how things actually work. So that was very good. I'm also very excited to share that we have our new licensing and customer care administrator started. She is finishing out week three this week, which will take me right into my next slide. Our staffing update for this month is that Ms. Tiffany Jones did begin on April 1st. It was not an April Fool's joke, and we are very, very excited that she has started. Tiffany joined us most recently from Med Impact, who is, they're a pharmacy insurance, actually a state employee, that's who our pharmacy benefits go through. So it was interesting. And the funny story is she came in for an interview and I had just worked with one of her CSRs, unbeknownst to the two of us, one of her CSRs days prior on something that I had been working on with them and had a really great experience. So she brings a wealth of customer service knowledge and experience for a call center function in particular over a number of years. Prior to being at Med Impact, she was at the startup of the Amazon Pharmacy program, where she did a lot of the regulatory work there for that. So she brings a great deal of knowledge and expertise in regulation as well as customer service. And we're really excited that she's actually in great with the team. And we're looking forward to what is on the horizon having Tiffany on the team. As I have mentioned multiple months at this point, I'm continuing to hold on the business and finance functionalities. I have started wrapping my head around and have made some decisions on the direction we're going. But the legislative session came to pretty much a standstill 2 weeks ago. And so I'm still waiting to see what happens with our bill and the appropriation request that was included with our bill to really, I just need to know one way or the other so that we can figure out exactly what our next steps are. I definitely think we'll be, I'm confident we're going to replace that position regardless, but we might be able to do a little bit more should that bill pass and we get the appropriation. So I want to make sure that we're doing it. Want to make sure that, similar to Tiffany, that we find the right person for the right role that we'll be fitting for this team. I have, one of the decisions that I have made is we're going to adjust it from a business and finance administrator position to an office manager role, because as I have assessed the organization, what that work really is, now that I have a much better understanding of what that work is, it's really more fitting of an office manager than an administrator, because a lot of that, frankly, a lot of that work is handed off to central services. So we'd really need somebody who can facilitate the internal side of it for that handoff to occur. So that's where I've landed. I haven't even created the position yet, but that's where we're going to start moving forward on that. Hopefully, I don't know. I'm actually not very optimistic on the current legislative session, and I will talk about that a little bit more in a minute. Our financial update for the month of March, we continue to do very well financially. For the month of March, we had a revenue of $375,197 and our expenses were $252,217. Our board fund at the beginning of July 2023 was $15,370,000. At the end of March, we were over $16.5 million. This is that off year, and because we are officially three quarters of the way through this high renewal year, I was able to do a comparison to 2 years ago, which happened to be my first year here, and we are trending exactly where we were 2 years ago. Our revenue is not any higher. Our expenses are a little bit higher, but it's because we're more completely staffed than we were 2 years ago when I arrived, and we're doing some different things through IT and a number of different things. But from a trend standpoint, our revenue is exactly where it was 2 years ago. And as I've been saying all year, I fully expected that our board fund would increase this year because revenue is so high this year. Through March, which is 75% of the actual fiscal year, we are 72% expended to our appropriation. So now we go as we're for half a month, if you will, into the last quarter of the fiscal year. Now we're starting to look at what our projected surpluses are potentially a potential projected surplus, but I'm very committed to ensuring that we spend our appropriation as fully as possible, particularly given that we have an appropriation request out. And it doesn't bode well when we're asking for money and we don't spend what our current appropriation is. So we're working on plans, and I actually have a meeting this afternoon with CSB to go over that because I'm not sure that I agree with their projection, to be candid. Next up is our testing data for the month of March. We had 427 candidates tested in that written practical format, which we're not quite 2 years into, but we're getting close. We had an 84% average passing rate. There's the breakdown of all of the data on the slide for you. Additionally, we had 519 519 candidates scheduled to test from April 1st to December 30th. 225 of those are the written practicals, four of which are Cosmo and two of which are Nail Tech, both in the Spanish language that we launched about a year, about 8 months ago, I'd say. I'll be very candid, the numbers are very low. So we've had a recent request for another language, and after data analysis, I just don't think we can justify that work at this point, I guess is how I would frame that. And on top of that, we have 294 theory tests.
What's the other language request?
Vietnamese.
Okay.
In written practical.
Do you think you'd get better turnout there in first language?
So the theory test is offered in Vietnamese already.
Okay.
And it was 121 people that took that test in calendar year 2023.
Okay.
And so making the assumption that those 121 would then also take that test, it when our overall number is like 13,000 people taking a test a year, if the percentage is so small. I'm not saying no, but we're also in the middle of another testing project, so we're just, it's not a today thing, I guess. It could be 6 months from now.
Got it.
Our licensing update for the month of March. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
On the left side, can we get the numbers for the apprenticeship program as well?
Apprenticeship would be included because they test. They would be included in these numbers, but there's no way for us to pull. I mean, I guess we could. No, there's really no way for us to go back and pull just the apprentices.
Okay, because I'm just starting to see an influx of students coming from apprenticeship programs where they're not actually getting the training. So I'm wondering if that's possibly why that number is so low for barbering, because you have these apprentices, they're taking it, and they're not getting that actual training. So are we the only ones who do the apprenticeship, or Cosmo?
All of them.
Cosmo does as well.
And that's all run through the Department of Economic Security.
Yeah. So I just, like, super high level, super quick. They administer that program. We receive a certificate of completion. So they have to do, like, Cosmo has to do 3,000 hours. We receive that certificate of completion, and then they go test. So we don't, it's not, yeah, but I actually hear what you're saying, because I've often wondered that myself, but I'm not sure that we have a mechanism, because we actually don't even get the student. I don't know. That's it. I'm very intrigued now.
We could possibly be able to see, because I brought that up years ago. That was when they first talked about going into that program. That was something that I mentioned to them that was going to be a problem in the future, and now it's starting to look like that's the part of the problem.
Okay. Good thing. Yeah.
What's the difference between FGN and
Spanish.
And as a friendly reminder about that, and they warned us, those Spanish tests are very formal Spanish, and not just in language, spoken or written language, but in their terminology for the particular discipline. And they warned us, you may see actually lower pass rate, because people who are going to take the test are thinking it's more informal language, and oftentimes they'll encounter terms they're not familiar with at all in those Spanish tests, which seems to trip them up. So it's not surprising sometimes when we see a 50% pass rate on just out of two people taking it, that one person failed. And that kind of goes to our consideration about doing a Vietnamese test as well. I think the consideration is it really helpful for people, or is it a hindrance in terms of that formal language and terminology?
Continue to be super proud, well, of the entire team, to be clear, but the licensing team continues to knock it out of the park, particularly when I think about when I sat here 2 years ago and quite frankly didn't even have data, but number two, knew that we were months and months behind on all three of these functions, and look at where we're at today. So for our new exam applications for the month of March, we received 277 new applications. Of that, 268 were approved within a 9-day timeframe. Again, average, to be clear for our schools here, that's average. That doesn't mean every application is approved in 9 days. That means some are approved same day. That means some are approved in 20 days. And we got that incomplete number down to 9. So we continue to make adjustments in our application process to ensure that we have complete applications before they even hit our queues for processing. On our establishment applications, we received 171. Of that, we had 135 approved in a 7-day turnaround and 36 incomplete. We continue to see the Secretary of State as the reason for the incomplete applications there, but we are not that we're counting, but we're about 14 days from that requirement no longer existing for our establishment. On our reciprocity applications, we actually saw about a 20% increase in applications last month, and we received 207. Of that, there were 137 approved in a 6-day time frame, and we have 70 incomplete at this point. And that again is because we're having to wait on those student certification of hours and testing from the other state. So it's, we have changed, we actually about mid-month, I think we changed that application to saying, the very first question on that application is, have you requested your certification from the state you're coming from? Yes or no? If they say yes, it'll let them continue on the application. If they say no, it tells them what they need to do to request their certification from the other. But we have not obviously seen the rewards of making that change on that application yet. And we may or may not for a given period of time. From our customer care update, as we have for the last couple of months, our calls are just through the roof. And I think last month I used the terminology victim of our own success. I actually don't like that because we're not victims. But I do think this is the reason we are seeing such an increase in calls. There's many reasons why, but one of them is simply our success. The fact that we answer the phone, the fact that that average wait time is 10 minutes, the fact that they're only on the phone with us for 6 minutes after that, they're getting their questions answered, they're getting their things done in a time, quality and timely manner. So we are seeing that total time that I want, that our audacious goal of 10 minutes was at 16 and a half minutes for March. We know that we were without a customer service rep for a period of time in the month of March. We've corrected that. We lost another customer service rep, and we have now corrected that. And so we're hoping to potentially see, plus we hired Tiffany and she's got a number of ideas. We're hoping to start seeing some shift in those numbers in the coming months. Our email inbox, we saw the highest number of email inquiries that we have ever seen as an organization. That number, the previous high was 800. And last month it was 1147, but we continue to respond to those in less than 36 business hours. So that we've marked that yellow because it's not the less than 24-hour business hours that we would like, but there's a reason why, because we got so many more inquiries than we ever have before. I think I'd also like to add back to the call center function. The other thing that we identified towards the end of February and in early March is we were so focused on answering the question and getting off the phone we may or may not have been answering all of the questions, the customers' questions. And so we took a renewed focus and are taking a look at single call resolution now, which I think is why we're seeing also higher handle times, because it's about 2 minutes longer than it had been. But at the same time, the hope is the trajectory will be that less calls come in because we're solving all of the or we're answering all of our questions on the front end. So we're doing a lot of problem solving around this, which is exciting for me because I think that's how we can really put long-term sustainable things on the table to solve that issue.
Are there, may I have a question, are there themes, like, you know, what's the number one?
The number one theme that has been since December is the create, so we transitioned the IT system for barbers in in December, and a lot of questions and issues with the creation of their new accounts in the new system. They're creating duplicate accounts. There's a lot of things that have gone into to that. And so, but because we're trending it, we've updated FAQs. I think I also referenced maybe in January or February, I can't remember exactly. There were some pretty significant data gaps in the old barber system. I don't think it was anybody's fault. I just think it was the system the way the system was designed and built. And when it made the transition over, garbage in, garbage out, garbage in. And so that's what we're actively cleaning up, both through the phone calls and in the email inbox. Isabella will be cleaning up a lot of barber accounts to get those on the right track for moving into the future.
But people are having difficulty finding their licenses to renew in the new system because the identifiers that we had to find those accounts, to Frank's point, weren't in the system. We originally started with social security numbers. We didn't have social security numbers. Then we changed the email address. Well, it depends on which email address you use. So our customer care team now knows to go look to see if there's a duplicate accounts, to merge them, to get
add the information.
Yeah, get them connected up in real time.
So when going back, one of the things that I started noticing where they were having a lot more issues was when they actually took it away from the schools, because the schools used to actually do all of the inputs, because they worked with the board and understood what needs to go in, how it needs to go in. Now that they start putting that responsibility on a lot of the customers out there, what's happening is that's why I think we're getting a lot of those incomplete forms or stuff missing due to the fact that they don't really understand, you know, certain, they take stuff with their phones, take the picture, go through, Safari doesn't work, you have to go through Google with the new system. So I believe that's because it's harder to find a problem we have with that. I don't know. You know, what you guys think.
So I'm going to flip side that on you, Marshall. And when we've had, so where we are seeing issues over the last year, not even necessarily because of new IT system, but just generally when we have on both sides where we have schools doing the work for the students, then the students don't know how to do it at renewal time. So we've had the flip side issue too, and we don't know the answer to that. We haven't embarked on the problem solving around that yet, but we have seen both sides of that coin has been an issue.
Okay. They tend not to know their password. They don't know their security questions. They don't know how to do things kind of for themselves as responsibility of their own license. So I hear what you're saying. It's kind of pros and cons either way. Yeah.
And ultimately we're trying to make the system easy enough that people can be self-sufficient.
And I do want to say that we have actively talked to GL about getting those systems on both mobile phones, tablets, and to work with Apple. Right now, it's the Apple phones that they're having. If anybody works on IT.
So maybe even putting like something, I don't know if we put like a little disclaimer when they go to log in to say, hey, you know, make sure that you try to log in from Google, not Safari, to use the Apple.
Yeah.
Because I didn't have that problem myself trying to get in. And I couldn't figure it out. And finally, I got on a whole computer. But it's like, went right through.
Yeah. So, if they call in, our customer care definitely says use Google Chrome, but we are actively working with GL to fix it so it would work on any of these browsers.
Have we made any progress on the brick and mortar office?
That we do have a plan for that.
Yes, yes.
We do have a plan. Stay tuned.
I'm like, brick and mortar for, oh, yes.
We have a plan. We're not quite ready to publicly announce what we're doing, though. Because it's gonna create more work that we're not prepared to handle. So I felt, we have a plan and it's coming very soon, but I don't want to get ahead of it yet in a public meeting.
There should be an update next.
Yep. And I can even touch base with you.
All right.
Our compliance update for the month of March, we received 45 consumer complaints, 20% of which were within our jurisdiction and assigned to an investigator. Additionally, we completed, or excuse me, conducted 378 routine inspections. And of that, there was an 86% compliance rate among licensees. And on top of that, 18 investigations were conducted. And boy, did we have a month of travel. We were in Globe, Yuma, San Luis, Somerton, Sierra Vista, Douglas, Eloy, Arizona City, Sonoyta, Patagonia, and Casa Grande last month. Just for clarification, anything we're putting, we're reporting to you all anytime we're outside of Maricopa and Pima County.
So if someone filed a complaint, it's an investigation that's conducted, and so that's what this is, and then inspections, it's just general routine.
And when they do an investigation, they often do an inspection at the same time.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
And some of those just going out are just for general inspections as well. They don't have to be investigation.
There's a lot of misunderstanding among the public about the complaints and what this board can do. So the reason that part of the reason that jurisdiction number is people got a bad haircut and want a refund, which we can't force. We get a lot of those. The complaint portal is now turned into a complaint portal about us not answering the phone or them not happy with the answer they received on the phone, which is not the intention of the complaint portal. But that's why you see a 20% jurisdiction number, among many other reasons, but those seem to be the themes. Rulemaking update. So second to last month that you get to hear about this, we did receive our GRC, which that's my report this month is no different than it was a month ago. But our final rules will be published on May 4th. And we are already taking all of the action steps necessary to get that out. We had actually an all staff training to go over the new rules last week, and doing all getting ready to communicate our communications plan around that. But I will do one final push on this next month for you all so that we get it across the finish line. And then there will no longer be a rulemaking update for a few months, I suspect, in this board report. We already have a 2.0 set of, Kelly has a set of 2.0 rule changes on the horizon. So I suspect in the fall, we'll be talking about some more just from the gaps that we've already identified in the new rules, as well as the potential legislative changes that we are hoping to make.
And we will get you a copy.
Yeah, everybody will have a copy. We're working with a print shop to make nice hard copies for everybody. We're having fun with this. Legislative update, not much has changed since last month, because as I mentioned a little while ago, the legislative session basically came to a complete standstill 3 weeks ago, I believe it was. Our House Bill 2168, which is the legislative request that this board approved in November, it has officially passed out of the House. It has officially passed out of Senate committee, but with an amendment that not very many people like. And so there is my understanding as of a week ago, is there some work being done to do a floor amendment in the Senate to remove the language that nobody likes, that has, to be candid, has nothing to do with barbering and cosmetology. It was one, it's an immigration related item.
Okay.
That has nothing to do with barbering and cosmetology. And there seems to be pretty broad support that there's okay, if we want to have this conversation, it shouldn't be being done on the backs of a barbering and cosmetology bill. So anyways, my understanding as of a week ago, they're working on this floor amendment in the Senate to remove that. It's got a number of hurdles because it was actually a committee chair who introduced this amendment. And I guess there's just political, I guess, ramifications to going against a committee chair. And so they're trying to figure out what that means when there's broad support for that not being in our bill, but going against a committee chair. So all of that to say, I continue to keep an eye on. I continue to have conversations with both the policy advisor and Representative Dunn, who is ushering this bill for us, as well as the governor's office, and to try to get this across the finish line. But everything's just come to a halt because they've gone to a 1 day a week session on Wednesdays. And so our bill still has not been assigned to, it would go to third reading before it goes to the floor, right?
It would go to Cal.
Yeah.
The floor.
Cal, yeah. So there's still a couple of steps. And then unfortunately, there was another part of that. There was an additional amendment made that clarified some language on the eyelash extension stuff, which we do support. But that means it's going to have to go back to the House before it can go to the governor. So we've got a long ways to go on this, but I'm trying to be optimistic, but I hate politics. And anyways, I think last month I had already referenced the massage therapy consolidation bill is officially dead, except that session's not over. So I'm cautious about saying it's dead until session is over. And then House Bill 2651, the cosmetology required instruction hours and study, that bill never actually even went to committee. But again, because session's not over and I've not actually heard that they're not going to pursue it, I don't want to exit out yet or cross that, strike it out yet. With that, here are our next six meetings. It's crazy to think that we are showing an October meeting on here. The next six meetings do all continue to be the third Friday of the month at 9 a.m. So I have put December 16th on here because we did, or sorry, December 13th on here because we did, there was an agreement in February of the board to move that meeting up a week so that we didn't have any holiday travel issues that week after. So I'm just going to continue to keep that there for you guys to know. We updated the calendar invite that's updated on the webpage, but that meeting will be December 13th. And with that, I will turn it over to you.
Acting chair. All right. Thank you. That was fantastic. I continue to be impressed by the amount of data and monitoring and review you do to keep the ship moving steadily. The next section is board training. We are going to learn about proper motion creation and voting. And so I think that goes to Jean.
Yeah. Good morning, everyone. Jean Calvin, Deputy Attorney General. Okay, there we go. So just a quick little training on making motions, when recusal is necessary, and voting. Many of you are probably familiar with a lot of this, but a little reminder is it's always good. You are familiar that the board has to conduct its business in open session and that you need a majority of the quorum that is present in order to affirmatively pass an action by the board. You have 9 members, your quorum is 5, so you need at least 5 members to conduct business and a majority of that quorum to successfully pass any motion that is made. There are 6 steps when you are planning on offering a motion that needs to be completed. You want someone to make the motion, there has to be a second. The chair or acting chair will repeat the motion. That helps orientate all the members, make a clear record, remind everyone what the motion is. And then there will be additional discussion on the motion. Many boards have discussion prior to the motion making and after the motion making. And then there's a vote, and then the chair will typically announce the outcome or the result of the vote. That also helps to orientate all the members about the vote whether the motion was successful, informs the public, and then also helps you maintain a clear record. There are some boards who only have discussion once a motion is made. Most of the boards that I'm familiar with and have worked with over the years have discussion that precedes the motion as well as after a motion is made. A lot of boards have scripts for their chairs to follow, and it will prompt the chair or whoever is overseeing the meeting to ask whether there is a motion. Oftentimes, it can happen where someone will make a motion, and before it's seconded, there might be additional discussion, and maybe someone makes another motion, and you can't have two motions on the floor at the same time. So just be sure that before you offer a subsequent motion, that the first motion has either been voted on or has been withdrawn.
The question.
Yeah.
Did someone have to withdraw a motion if it gets no second? Or do we just say there was no second, we can move on?
If there is no second, then the motion just dies. It does not have to be withdrawn. There are some boards who have the practice that the chair does not make a motion or does not second a motion. And I think that is more the exception than the rule. Thinking behind it is that it is a practice that would help ensure that the chair does not dominate the discussion or the deliberations. But the boards that I represent currently, the chair does make motions or does second them. But I don't have a board where it's, you know, common practice at the expense of other members for that to happen. This board is very good at identifying themselves before they speak. This is a very good habit to develop, especially in the times of virtual meetings, and the public is participating virtually, other board members are participating virtually. I think the record can be a little bit murky when you have a virtual meeting as far as to speaking, but you develop the habit to say that, you know, Smith moved that. That's very helpful for everyone, and it is just a very good habit to develop. And the second paragraph on this slide just gives you a few examples of what you might say when you make a motion, as far as identifying yourself. These are a couple of things that through years of experience, I have come across that it's not a good idea to say that, you know, I motioned that. You would want to say that, you know, I moved that. You do not want to say so moved or I moved the committee recommendation, because that does not help inform the other board members what the motion is or the public, and it doesn't make the record clear. You want to articulate exactly what the motion is. And that's especially important when we are trying to ascertain and make sure that our record that we're making is very clear. These are also not motions, but I'm thinking about, I suggest, I recommend that. You would not want to make those statements and consider them a motion, and you don't want to second them. As the chair, as the board member, if someone makes a motion and it is not clear to you, you should always feel very comfortable asking them for clarification. That's also true of staff. If they are unclear, they're taking minutes, they're making notes, they have to carry out the business of the board. If it's not clear to the staff either, anyone should feel comfortable to say, could you repeat that motion, or I'm not clear the intent of your motion. So never hesitate to do that. And it can really come from, you know, anyone, board member or the staff.
Can I have one more question? What was it again? So it's not, you can't say I make a motion, so it should be like Flores. Like, what was this, the template for
Flores move that the board accept the, you know,
okay,
or grant the application up.
Okay.
Yeah. And I have seen through the years that boards will often rely on the staff to sort of clean up a motion that is not maybe articulated, you know, as clearly as we would hope. And that puts a lot of pressure on the staff. And so it's really the board's responsibility to make sure the motions are clear, and individual members should take on that responsibility as well. And that's okay. This is something you guys do in your everyday life. So to seek help or request help is fine. It's all about getting the motion correct so we can all ensure that we are voting on what is intended. There are complex issues or maybe issues that don't come before the board very often, and that makes motion making even a little bit more difficult. And so I'm guilty, my colleagues are guilty of sometimes saying what I'm hearing you say is, and we will, you know, articulate what we believe is the motion. And, you know, a board member will say, you know, so moved, but you want to do your best to kind of restate the motion so it's coming from you. But it happens, and, you know, the AGs are not doing it to, you know, put motions in your mouth, but rather to help articulate a motion that maybe we don't see as much or hear as much. So that does happen. We're just trying to assist. So use your clear and understandable language. And here's an example of, you know, a motion that, you know, you might make, and you want to be sure that it is a complete motion, you're moving for particular action, and then you're stating that, you know, with the letter of concern, this is the concern. That really helps the staff, because they go after the meeting and they draft the letters of concern, and they need to be articulate. They need to articulate in that letter of concern exactly what the board's concern was. When someone seconds the motion, that person doesn't have to be recognized. The motion is made, it's clear, everybody understands the intent. Someone would just say, you know, score of I second, or I second the motion. If there's not a second, the motion does die. And if the motion dies for lack of a second, the chair will ask if there is an alternate motion that someone would like to make, and that helps facilitate moving the matter along. And usually you get a motion that is made by someone with maybe a counter opinion than what was just moved. Again, about discussion, look forward, and I think it's a preferable way. You should be able to have a discussion before and after a motion. Discussion before a motion will help inform everybody, gets people thinking about where your other board members are leaning, and help you think about what is important and how you might decide the motion. And then, of course, after motion, additional discussion should be held. The chairs, they're always very good about ensuring that after the motion is made and a second is asked, if there's any additional discussion. Now, when we have the voting, this is all very, you know, clear to you. After the discussion, the chair calls for a vote. It can either be, the vote can be by a group vote. I'll say aye, any opposed, say nay. Health boards are required, when they are imposing discipline, they have to do a roll call vote. Sometimes we will ask a roll call vote. If based on the discussion, we're not clear how the vote is going to land, so we'll ask for a roll call vote to ensure that we have an accurate tally of how the vote went. No anonymous vote, no secret ballot, no voting by top three. Again, the chair, it's just good practice to repeat the motion again right before the vote. Again, when there's long discussions and a lot of people are participating, sometimes it's hard for the chair to keep track of exactly what the motion was. So that's when staff or the AG will often step in, make sure they take a lot of notes. I usually have the motion down, and AGs are happy to repeat the motion according to their notes, and of course, staff as well. And then once the vote is taken, the chair announces the outcome of the motion. Some boards, and I think it's option, only allow the chair to vote in the case of a tie. I haven't come across that in years. All my chairs regularly vote. If there is a tie vote, That means that the motion failed. And if there is a tie, the motion fails, then the chair will ask if there's an alternative motion or if you want to engage in more discussion. Perhaps more discussion will lead to someone rethinking their previous position and lead to a vote that does not result in a tie. I have been in board meetings where there's a tie. There is additional discussion. There is a motion that takes the position that, you know, opposite of what was made, you know, previously, and it still ends up in a tie. And we have then tabled the matter because one or two, you know, board members were absent, and we have put that on a future agenda and deliberated the matter again, considered the matter again when there are more board members to participate. And the tie is resolved, you know, one way or the other.
You need to formally withdraw a failed motion, or if it's once it failed, we're good, it's gone.
Once it failed, it's gone. It is a motion and it failed. You're not withdrawing that motion.
Okay.
I've never been in a position in too many years to recount where there was a tie and it was just, you know, insurmountable. Usually there is one or two board members missing, so we can bring it back. But a decision, you know, ultimately has to be made. So somebody's going to have to, you know, reconsider their position and change their mind. Recusal is when you need to remove yourself from the voting on a matter because you have a conflict of interest or there's some other impermissible circumstance. You're not voting, you're not participating in the matter, and you are not discussing. You've just totally removed yourself. The best practice is if you have recused yourself, you announce when the matter is called, and you would notify the chair that I have recused myself in this if I have a conflict of interest. I don't know if do your board members fill out a written form when there's a conflict?
Yeah, so if by practice, if the board members identify at the beginning of the agenda when we ask, if they identify a conflict, then we have a form that they complete.
Okay.
Showing that. So they have an annual declaration.
Yeah.
And then if there's at the meeting a conflict, then they complete the form and they remove themselves from the tables for the vote. But I can say it happened one time in my now 2 years here. Okay. And that was just last month.
Okay. All right, well, that's perfect then, but it can come up. And it, even if you don't declare it at the beginning of a meeting, if you get into a matter and realize, oh my, you know, I have a conflict here. We have had a past relationship, professional with this person, and it didn't end well. I need to recuse. Anytime you recognize a conflict, you need to recuse yourself. And even if it comes up, you know, during the middle of the meeting and not in the beginning, I'm glad that you fill out the forms as the issue arises.
The auditor general made us.
Yeah, that's a very good practice. If you have a statutory conflict, then you have to recuse. I get a call. I represent several boards, and I probably receive a couple of calls a month from different board members about wanting to talk through whether they should recuse themselves from a matter. Whether you recuse is a personal decision, but it is often helpful to receive, you know, kind of clarity and talking through it to help you make that decision. So that's something that AAGs do routinely, and so never hesitate to reach out to us if you have a question about a conflict of interest. I represent the board, so there are three or four board members recused from, you know, several items on the agenda just because of the nature, you know, of the work. I represent the Board of Pharmacy, and there's someone there on the board who worked for CVS and one who worked for Walgreens. So, you know, they're recusing from a number of matters, you know, every meeting. And if you are required to recuse because you have a statutory conflict of interest, that can result in criminal prosecution. So be sure that you are paying very close attention to that. When you need to recuse, you have a statutory conflict of interest, and that is when you or a family member has a substantial interest in a decision by the board.
And if you have a substantial interest or a family member has a substantial interest in a decision made by the board, you have to recuse. And that substantial interest means a pecuniary or proprietary interest. And it can either be direct or indirect, but other than a remote interest. So it's a decision that's before the board and you have some ownership interest, the proprietary interest in the outcome or the matter before the board, you need to recuse. Or if you have some financial interest in the outcome, you need to recuse. So for instance, my, you know, CVF pharmacist who is on the board, she doesn't have a direct interest in the CVS pharmacist who is appearing before them because I don't know how many hundreds of CVS pharmacists the board licenses, but we'll get to this, but it's like it's an appearance that it wouldn't, the appearance of impropriety of a CVS, you know, pharmacist in charge sitting in judgment of another CVS pharmacist, how would that look? And so, you know, those kind of interests require you to remove. She certainly doesn't have an ownership interest in CVS, and she doesn't have a financial interest in whether that pharmacist, you know, is reprimanded or disciplined. It's not going to impact her financially, but then we have the appearance, and that's something else that that you want to consider. But disqualification is mandatory if you have that statutory conflict of interest. This is how you would declare that conflict of interest. In the beginning, it continues. You could say, I have a conflict of interest on item, you know, 4D, and then you would just recuse yourself and fill out the form. As Frank mentioned, you should leave the table or turn off your camera. You're accused for the audience, and by your body language convey some sort of method one way or the other. You need to have your poker face on and just let the board do. Let the board do it. You also are required to recuse yourself if you have a bias, a prejudice, or you have predetermined or prejudged the matter that's before the board. And this is aside from any pecuniary or proprietary interest. You need to consider these when you are evaluating the matters before the board and ask whether you have, you know, some sort of bias, prejudice, or prejudgment. Maybe you had a prior relationship, a professional relationship with a licensee that was, you know, require you know that individual's work history, you know, you worked with them before, you know, the type of work that they do, and you just cannot adjudicate this matter with an open mind. That just kind of explains what, you know, the bias or the prejudice is. Again, just even if you have a, it's not a statutory interest because of a financial gain or a benefit, but you have a bias or prejudice, you also recuse in the same type of manner. This is about the appearance of impropriety that I was discussing earlier with the example of the CVS pharmacist. You may still be required or should consider whether you should resolve to avoid the appearance of impropriety, and that is a ground of recusal. It's apart from the statutory conflict, and it's very important to consider this because we always want to ensure that the board is conveying the a certain image of impartiality and fairness, not only to the public, but to the licensees, to the complainant, to the stakeholders. To always ensure I have some sort of relationship, I know about this case, or I know about a person involved in this case, but does it require me to recuse myself? Will my participation reflect negatively on myself or on the board or the board's business? And so really give that some thoughts. I'm also happy to speak with you. You can contact me and we can kind of walk through this. I could provide other examples, maybe that are similar to your situation. And ultimately, of course, you decide, but just remember the effect that it could have on the board and in your business. Some people
Okay, these are instances where you don't need to recuse, just because you are acquainted with someone. Maybe you are in on a professional, committee or association, or you serve with them in some other capacity. That does not automatically disqualify you from recusal, but you could state your relationship. Maybe you were a classmate of a licensee, 15 years ago, we haven't had contact with them then, but you would state on the record that this does not impair my ability to fairly adjudicate this matter. Well, against the abstention, just really quick, that's when you decline to vote in the matter. If not a recusal, you participate in the discussion, you will ask questions, you review the material, but you decide that you're going to abstain. This can be difficult for some board members because you have a duty to adjudicate those cases that come before you in which you are not recused. Just because the case is difficult or it's a close call, you still have to do your responsibility, complete your responsibility, and adjudicate the matter. So an abstention is not a way to get out of a difficult decision. You have to weigh the evidence, and you do your best. You've done your homework. You're prepared. You listen to all the testimony. So it's not recommended that you use the abstention as a way to. I'm just going to set that aside because I just can't make up my mind, and the evidence was too close. So just keep that in mind. It should not be used with the way to fight that kind of your obligation. And that's all I have. I think most of you, and I can provide my, I don't know why the last slide is on there, but I will feel free to give you my contact information, email, call, anything you want. I'd be happy to walk you through it.
And I can make that connection too, should you ever need it.
Thank you. And if you notice that we are committing an error along the way today, please feel free to intervene and correct us in real time.
Thank you. And I will.
Well, thank you. That was very helpful. Our next session is the complaint review and consent agenda. And for the students in the room, a consent agenda is when the board is able to take one single action on a number of pages with one motion, basically, as we just learned about what motions were. So we can dismiss, approve, recommend for an informal interview with just one big vote, a multiple vote. So with that, we have Section A, which is recommended dismissal. Are there any motions or recommended dismissals, or would board members like to discuss?
I move that we accept staff recommendations under step 1A for recommended dismissal.
Fantastic. We have a motion from Goodman Glover. Any second there?
Second.
Fantastic. So the motion before us is accept staff recommendation to dismiss cases 1 through 11 in section 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, 6A. And all in favor, please say aye.
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 All those opposed, please say nay. Hearing none, any abstentions? Hearing none, motion passes for section 6A. All those cases, we accept staff recommendations to dismiss. Section 6B is recommended non-disciplinary letter of concern. Board members, any discussion or motion to accept or reject staff recommendations or any specific cases you'd like to allow?
Principal Glover moves that we accept staff recommendations for recommended non-disciplinary letter of concern under Section 6B.
All right, we have an accept motion for a non-disciplinary letter of concern for 6B. Any second?
Ben, I second it.
All right, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? All right, motion passes. We accept staff recommendations in section 6B for a non-disciplinary letter of concern for cases 1 through 9. We're moving on to 6C, recommended informal interview without negotiation terms. There are two pages there. Any discussion or motions from the board?
Kuzma and Glover moved that we accept staff recommendations under section 6B to recommend for informal interview without negotiation terms.
Second.
Not second.
All right, although I will repeat the motion. So we have section 6B, an accept motion for staff recommendation for an informal interview without negotiation terms. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? All right, motion passes for section step 6B, recommended informal interview without negotiation terms. Moving on to step 6B, recommended informal interview or negotiation term. Do we have any discussion, pull out of individual cases, or motion?
Kuzma and Glover move that we accept staff recommendations under section 6B to recommend to informal interview or negotiation terms.
Thank you. Any second?
Second.
All right, we have a motion and a second to recommend informal interview or negotiation terms under section 6B, cases 1 through 19. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Hearing none, motion passes to accept staff recommendations and 6B, recommended informal interview or negotiation.
Madam Acting Chair, if I may interrupt real quick, we have moved to section 7A, and we do have three universal applicants to be presented to the board today, and with licensing specialist Lakeisha Coleman to present those licensing situations.
We had Mr. Bagley on here, so thank that. Acting Chair Bellin Horace and members of the board, my name is Lakeisha Coleman, and I'll just present in the three universal board application. Number one is going to be on that thing. Bison. Mr. Bison has presented all of the required documents for his complete universal application. After I reviewed all his documents, I have reviewed them, and I have determined that all of the documents are in good standing. Today, I do approve or deny licensure today for him. If you do have any further questions about the documents that have been uploaded, I'll be happy to answer them. Thank you.
Thank you. I have a question overall. Do we review and approve every universal application?
Out of country.
These are out of country. So after I review them, when I bring them to you, if there was an issue, then I wouldn't bring it to the board. It would be brought to them like a denial, and there would be why.
Madam Acting Chair, Deputy Shepherd, this is for barbers only per our statute.
Got it. Okay. All right. So we have heard staff. Any discussion or motions from the board on approval or denial?
Kuzma and Glover move that we grant licensure to applicant Ahmed Bison.
Okay, we have a motion. Second.
Motion second.
All right, so we have a motion and a second to permit or approve licensure for universal reciprocity for Ahmed Bison. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion passes. Board approves licensure reciprocity for Ahmed Bison. Thank you, everyone. Number two.
Okay, so the second one for Gloria Carrasco. Ms. Carrasco has also presented all required documents for her universal application. I have reviewed all documents and understand that they are in good standing. Today, I do ask if you're going to approve and deny licensure for her today. If you do have any further questions about the documents presented, I'll be happy to answer.
Thank you. Any discussion, review, motion from our board?
I do have one question. On the, on the record of completion, just out of curiosity, as far as like the hours completed, do we still put the like where, or as long as it just has
as long as it has
the total hours?
Yes.
Kuzma and Glover move that we grant licensure to applicant Gloria Carrasco.
Thank you. Any questions?
McFadden, I'm taking that.
Thank you. So the motion is to approve licensure for universal reciprocity for Gloria Carrasco. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? All right, motion passes. Board approved licensure for Gloria Carrasco.
And final applicant is Jose Rodriguez. Mr. Rodriguez has also presented all required documents for a complete universal classification. After reviewing his documents, I've determined that they are all in good standing. Here to ask if we're going to approve or deny licensure today. If you have any further questions about the document presented, I'll be happy to answer.
All right, board, feel free to review any suggested motions or watch.
Ruth Mondglover moves that we grant licensure to applicant Jose Gutierrez.
All right, so we have a motion to approve for Jose Gutierrez. Any seconds?
Wilkinson, second.
All right, any discussion?
Yes, one second, please. What I'm reviewing right now is looking at the completion form. Just trying to see how did they complete 400 hours in 30 days? That is just. Just as I'm looking through these, the first one was okay. I see where they broke everything down. On this one, I don't know how you can complete 400 hours in 30 days. Being a school owner. This is part of what I said, like with these completion forms and stuff, we really have to, because what's happening is people are just, I've seen it for years. They just push it through, it'll slide through the cracks. We don't catch it, they get licensed. Then later on, we come back and go, well, they're already licensed, there's nothing we can do now.